my sense is if I, as a plugged in guy who spent his entire career and most of the last 20 something years at the intersection of music and technology didn't understand it that well, then I bet I wasn't alone. So when we talk about democratizing it, we're talking about awareness, but we're also talking about making it accessible to people all across the globe. We are running global businesses here, not just US oriented. I think we touch something like 200 distinct countries in terms of our offering. So part of it is just getting the word out. Part of it is making it more available to students. And part of it is bringing more and more artist educators into the fold to partner with us.
Hey there, it's Tim, and I just wanted to let you know that if you're teaching guitar or want to break into offering guitar lessons to expand your business, you are going to want to check out our brand new show, The Top Music Guitar Podcast with Michael Gumley. It's airing on Friday on all podcast platforms as a weekly show, and with getting started on April 8. You'll get insider advice on how the best guitar studios get built and how to teach guitar lessons that students will keep coming back for. Don't miss it. Come and check it out now. Hey teachers, it's Tim Topham here, music teacher, speaker, and founder of Top Music, and this is the Topcast, where we give you the tools and inspiration you need to run the most fun and profitable music studio you possibly can. It's great to be with you again for another week. Thank you so much for tuning in. Always an absolute pleasure. These are the highlight of my week when I get to record these episodes, because I get to connect with you and share some cool new ideas, some research, some apps, some downloads, whatever it is. It is always my pleasure, and thank you again for tuning in to this year's podcast. It's been an absolute delight so far, and I'm looking forward to sharing today's episode with you. Today's episode actually features a very special guest, the CEO of True Fire Studios. Now, I know that a lot of my listeners are piano teachers, and you may not have heard of True Fire Studios. True Fire Studios, we'll unpack a little bit later, is one of two of the main apps for learning guitar actually online. The CEO, Owen, who I'm interviewing today, has an incredible experience in online education and ed tech, and that's what we're going to be talking about today. Music online trends in education, what it means for us as studio teachers and how it can impact us and what we can do using ed tech in our own studios. Before we dive in today, I wanted to let you know about the Top Music Guitar Podcast. It's now live. You probably heard at the top of the show. Our head of guitar, Michael Gumley, has been hard at work interviewing an amazing collection of guitar teachers and influencers and authors and speakers and YouTubers who have all been more than happy to share as many tips as they can about teaching and also running their business. So if you'd like to check that out, if you have a friend that teaches guitar or a student or a family member, whatever it is, or if you teach guitar, or maybe if you'd like to start teaching guitar or adding that to your lessons, then go online to any of the podcast services or Spotify and just search for the Top Music Guitar Podcast or Michael Gumley. You should be able to find it over there. Eleanor Cobb and EVC Music is this month's Top Music Sheets composer. And this month's collection of 11 pieces features studio licensed compositions by Heather Hammond, Nancy Litton, Nikki Isles, Sam Wedgwood, and many more, all under the EVC Music banner run by Eleanor Cobb. Just wait till you hear Robots Go Clubbing. Yeah, I think that's one of the coolest composition titles I've heard in a while. And Lavender Haze, which is a soaring recital showstopper from Eleanor Cobb. We actually share all the recordings freely up on our SoundCloud, so you can check them out. And if you'd like to access the sheet music, which you can use for online lessons, you can they're all studio licensed. Just grab a Top Music Pro Lite subscription. It's just $10 a month over at topmusic.co/sheets. And if you head to that address, you'll find all the details of all the other stuff you get, including the free sheets, which actually does include access to our expansive webinar vault. So that's over at topmusic.co/sheets. I hope you check it out. All right, let's get on with the show. Owen Grover, my guest today, is CEO of True Fire Studios, the world's leading online music education platform. Owen has spent the last 25 years at the intersection of music and technology. Previously, he served as CEO of Pocket Casts, an acclaimed global podcasting platform. Actually, it was based in Adelaide here in Australia. He was also a founding member of the iHeart Radio team and helped establish iHeart's entertainment division. A passionate music fan, Owen lives in Brooklyn with his wife and son. Welcome to the show, Owen Grover.
Thanks for having me, Tim. It's great to be here.
So I thought we'd cover two areas today because there's lots that we could talk about. You have an incredible amount of experience in a number of different companies in the content space, in music education, in e-learning. So I really want to dive into that. But I also want to find out about TrueFire Studios, which is the company you're currently CEO of, what it's all about, and some of its goals for the future too. But before we do that, we should just find out a little bit about you. So tell us, whereabouts are you? I'd love to know a little bit about your own musical background, what instrument you played as well, assuming you did.
Yeah, so I do. I wouldn't say that I'm as expert as folks like you, but what I would say is that music has been a fundamental part of my life since before I could remember. It's always been a source of strength and comfort for me, and it's also been so core to my identity as a human being. I started playing in bands when I was 12 years old. I had a middle school band. It was all covers. We did everything from U2 and the Ramones to the Grateful Dead. I'd like to point out I'm not a Grateful Dead fan, but I wasn't the leader of the band, so I just did what they told me. I've always sung. I've always played guitar. I've got an acoustic guitar here with me in my office, but I've got about four or five different guitars that I like to diddle around with. And, you know, my fandom and my playing have always been such a core piece of who I am and has informed not only my career, but, you know, decisions I've made in my life. I remember I lived in the Pacific Northwest after graduating from college, and I saw so many great shows. And I think I felt very homesick because I felt like I was missing out on all the great things happening in New York. But every time I thought, well, I need to rush home, there'd be another great show happening. So the mid-90s, as you can imagine, there was lots of great music happening in the Pacific Northwest back then. So it really has been just totally fundamental for me. I live in Brooklyn with my wife and my son. My son is also a music maker, but unlike me, he makes his music on a laptop using FL Studio.
Ah, how old is he?
He's 19. He's at university now, and he's taking a gap year, so I'm seeing him more now. But he's always been very interested in music. And so it's just part of who we are. It's part of our identity. I've spent over 20 years at the intersection of music, technology, content, and product. So it's been a journey for me as I wended my way through the industry. But I really am so enthusiastic and excited about what's happening in the e-learning space, particularly vis-a-vis music. And we can talk about that, but it's part of why I'm excited to talk to you today about TrueFire Studios and music learning in general on the internet.
Sounds great. Well, you're currently CEO of TrueFire Studios, and I did a little bit of research to try and get straight in my head where TrueFire has come from. So my understanding is that TrueFire Studios was a merger of TrueFire, which was a guitar, well, is a guitar subscription online service for learning guitar, and Jamplay, which was a similar service. I'm sure they had some differences. But anyway, they came together in December 2019. And now, while I know you weren't around in the company at that stage, why did you think that merger made sense and similar ones? Because I know there's a bit of this happening in the industry, even in YouTube channels combining and these subscription services and things like that.
So I think the folks who were behind the merger, who are my partners, felt very strongly about the trends, the secular trends in terms of online music learning and e-learning just in general. And then, you know, so from the user perspective, and the learner perspective, the convenience of a massive catalog of courses and lessons, styles of learning, spanning genres and instruments, the always on aspect of it. And the fact that while e-learning was taking off in lots of different ways related to, you know, how schools and educational institutions interfaced with IP-enabled tools on that front, that in fact, this area, the area of online music education, was still relatively not as well known as some of these other areas, certainly not as well known as some of the other spaces in which I've operated, like podcasting or online music and DSPs. So I think the notion was that the time now was coming. This is all pre-pandemic, mind.
Of course, yeah.
And that it would make sense to build some scale in the space, not only to benefit customers, learners, if you will, with the best quality tools and artists and curriculum, but also an opportunity to work more closely with artists to help them make a living doing what they do best, which is playing music. And so for us, there was a really clear lane that we felt was to a certain extent not necessarily capitalized on. We know that the space has been filled with lots of great companies, most of which are homegrown. We were talking about Scott Devine from Scott's Bass Lessons. He's built an incredible platform. Justin Guitar, Guitar Tricks, True Fire, Jam Play, Artist Works, which is part of our family now. All of these businesses have actually been around for a bit, you know, a few years at a minimum, in some cases as many as 15 or 20 years. And the idea was that through creating some scale, we could better market, provide better outcomes for artists, and most importantly, provide the best possible outcomes for our customers.
I was interested to read that after the merger and after you came on board, you also acquired Fader Pro. And Fader Pro is a community and online courses for people learning music production. You're talking about FL Studio before. I'm sure there's some courses in there about that. So what was the interest? Because that's quite different to guitar. So I'm trying to get a sense of what True Fire Studios does, what the mission is, because you've now got guitar, you've got Fader Pro, so you've got EDM. They're quite different things.
They are. And Artist Works, which is a company that we acquired in the summer of 2021, is also quite different, with a host of different genres and instruments. I mean, they've got French horn among many other instruments and guitar, and they're very deeply rooted in bluegrass, have an incredible roster of bluegrass musicians, but banjo, mandolin, you name it, right? You know, the right way to look at this is that we're not trying to collect a bunch only of guitar learning assets. What we're trying to do is democratize music education, you know, through the deployment of these online platforms, right? We're thinking about the ways in which, you know, the internet has enabled access and reach in all of these other areas. You think about how it's changed the television market, you know, or the movie market or the music market, right? And in the same way, those platforms have paved the way to create a broader understanding among consumers that you can achieve the convenience and the access to deep catalogs of relevant content through these platforms. And we're sort of swimming in that wake. What I would say about Fader Pro is I recognized very early on that there was just an enormous community of folks online who were either already using, you know, computers at home to create their own music, or wanted to learn how to use Logic, wanted to learn how to use Pro Tools, wanted to learn how to use FL Studio, and wanted to learn from the best in the business. And we felt that that was highly consonant with our mission to democratize online music education, and really felt like we wanted to be able to touch different kinds of learning styles, different instruments, different genres, right? And at the end of the day, what is FL Studio but another instrument? It's just another way to express yourself in the same way that, you know, that playing guitar might be. I'll also push back a little bit because it's actually not as distinct as you think. We've done some research that demonstrates that people who have a primary interest in guitar would also like to learn how to record music at home, even if only for their own enjoyment. And conversely, people who create electronic music would like to learn how to play acoustic instruments to supplement the work that they do. And if you're any fan of house music, EDM, techno, you name it, you know that from time to time and often frequently, acoustic instruments show up in that music.
Yeah, it makes it all the better. Yeah.
Makes it all the better. Couldn't have said it better myself.
Yeah. So you've used the word democratize a couple of times. What does that actually mean in the context of what we're talking about?
Well, to a certain extent, it's just about awareness. Do people understand that these products are available to them? And then so creating the greatest possible footprint for what we're doing, right? And creating a greater surface area. You know, I have been in and around the music industry since the 90s, and I didn't properly understand the confines or the you know, the contours of the online music education market. I'm learning from smart folks like you, but what I would say is it was like a hidden iceberg. And yes, I knew you could learn how to play a song on YouTube, and you know that they're terrific educators and influencers on all of the social platforms. I got that, but I don't think I understood the depth of curriculum and the pedagogy available to folks who really wanted to learn. And so my sense is, if I, as a plugged in guy who spent his entire career and most of the last 20 something years at the intersection of music and technology didn't understand it that well, then I bet I wasn't alone. So when we talk about democratizing it, we're talking about awareness, but we're also talking about making it accessible to people all across the globe. We are running global businesses here, not just US oriented. I think we touch something like 200 distinct countries in terms of our offering. So part of it is just getting the word out. Part of it is making it more available to students. And part of it is bringing more and more artist educators into the fold to partner with us.
So you became CEO in April 2020, just after the pandemic hit. I mean, that must have been quite some timing. And I would guess that that was the start of a period of huge growth for those. Would you call them brands or sub company? What do you call them?
Brands, exactly, as I would refer to
them. Within True Fire Studios. Yeah. So how did that play out in the end? And has that been sustained? Or, like, I was just reading about Peloton just yesterday, actually, and they're not doing so well now after the pandemic, or now that the pandemic's sort of calming down. How are you guys going, and what do you see happening there?
So we've had strong growth in both of the years that I've been involved with the business. What I would say is, there's a distinction between what you would say is exogenous factors. Like, nobody can account for the fact that there's going to be a global pandemic, right? I don't think anybody saw that coming. And if you did, you probably weren't, working in a digital content business, right?
Right.
certainly people in the CDC might, here in the States, might argue, we've been warning about a pandemic for years. Yeah. Well, that didn't help. You know, we still made every possible mistake and so on. So and then there's stuff that we're doing to try to make the business stronger and just create a solid foundation underneath us. And that has to do with how we think about technology, how we think about hosting, how we think about content, all the boring stuff associated with making sure that people can get access to the curriculum that they want as quickly and easily as they can across every platform. Some of it has to do with marketing. Some of it has to do with how we work with artists. Some of it has to do with how we work with partners like the musical instrument manufacturers, right? And that's the stuff that's under our control. But what I would say is that first year we were really lucky, just because people were stuck at home and, you know, either they were ready to start playing an instrument, or in the case, I think the more frequent and common case was people might have had a guitar or an instrument lying around that had not gotten a lot of use in the preceding months and years. And they sat there at home and said, you know, today's a good day to start playing again. And we really encouraged people to pick that guitar and that bass and that banjo and, you know, everything else back up again. And so we were lucky to be able to take advantage of that tailwind. And that's what I call it. I call it tailwind. We didn't create the breeze, but it certainly pushed us forward significantly. And then last year was about consolidation and, you know, building that framework and that foundation that I was talking about, getting smarter with our marketing, working more closely and endemically with musical instrument manufacturers and other kinds of partners. And so it's not going to be any one thing, and we can't expect people to be stuck at home and, you know, to be like fish in a barrel. That's just not going to happen. So for me, the mission has been, you know, creating a really solid and steady platform from which to grow.
It was interesting. I mentioned Peloton before. I actually found an Adweek article about you guys that compared you with, or put you on the same level as Peloton and Tesla as the most interesting disruptors we must keep watching. That's a pretty cool place to be positioned. You must have enjoyed that.
That was a great way to start the year last year. I won't lie. That was a lot of fun.
I was going to say that's pretty cool. But I mean, which really surprised me, like that came out of left field for me to read that, because I wouldn't picture a music education and a learning company on par with the disruption kind of capabilities of Tesla. So what is the disruption, do you think, that you're actually, that the article's talking about?
Yeah, so I think it's actually pretty straightforward. I can use my own personal experience. I remember at a certain point in my early adulthood, I had always been self-taught with guitar, and I thought, you know, it's so important to me and I love it so much, I want to start taking lessons. What would you do 10 years ago if you wanted to take lessons, or 15 years ago? You know, usually what it was there that you go into a coffee shop and there's a flyer, Steve teaches you how to play guitar, and you rip the mobile number off of the bottom, you know, and you take it home, or you text the person, or you email them. And they, you know, some stranger might show up at your house, or you'd show up at the music store and sit down with a stranger. And, you know, it was all based on when you could get together. And, you know, it was as convenient as those sorts of things can be. So when you think about the disruption there, you go from that to an always on, anytime available platform, incredibly convenient. With access not to one teacher, but to hundreds of different teachers spanning multiple genres, instruments, methods of learning, techniques, everything from, you know, just basic bar chords and Cage to advanced musical theory, and everything in between, across a host of instruments, right? And so the distinction there is really disruptive when you think about it, because it just scales, right? If you want to wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning and work on your technique, you can do that. In the old model, your teacher would come once a week or twice a week or whatever, but you couldn't talk to the person, at least if you were a sane human being, at 2 o'clock or 3 o'clock in the morning. And so it's just a different, you know, you can learn at your own speed, right? What do we talk about? Like convenience wins, right? It was something that was pounded in my head early in my career. And this represents a kind of convenience that is in many ways analogous to the convenience of turning on Netflix and dialing up, you know, any one of a several thousand movies or shows, rather than having to tune in at 8 o'clock on an evening or go to the movie theater. It's disruptive to me in the same way, in that it's convenient, in that there's access to enormous content that wouldn't otherwise be available. And it's the way that all of this cultural output is going. And I include everything from education to entertainment and everything in between.
Yeah, it's really interesting hearing this, because the nature of disruption actually affects the people who are my main audience. I feel kind of protective for my music teachers who are all listening. So I want to bring this up, because a lot of music teachers feel threatened by these apps, which TrueFire is promoting. And they have, you know, there's obviously great opportunities for people to learn themselves through these apps. But yeah, a lot of teachers do feel threatened by them, thinking they're going to be, you know, made redundant by technology. So what would you say to those teachers? And do you still recognize a role for music teaching?
Well, I'll start there. 100%, right? We are not, what's the right way to put this? We are not focused on the educational market. We are not a proxy for Berklee School of Music or some kind of advanced degree. You know, this is not education in the same way that you might think of in the States, K-12 or university education. That's not what we do. This is about lifelong learning. So I want to start with there. This in no way, shape, or form obviates the need for great educators in any space, music or otherwise. I think that's really critical. I have great respect for educators. My parents, my mother and my father, are both university professors, among other things. But, you know, I have an incredible respect and admiration for educators. So the first thing is, this, when people ask us what business we're in, the easy and glib answer is we're in the online music education business, right? It's easy to say. But I would actually argue that if you take it a step higher, if you take it one level up, if you lens out, what we're really in is we're really in the self-actualization business. The reason that people would hire us to learn music is some combination of enjoyment, skill, and mastery. And that's about being the person you idealize yourself as, that you envision yourself to be. And the path that we put you on is one that gives you the opportunity to express, you know, the true authentic version of yourself through music. That's the business that we're in. Now, let me get back to what you asked before about the other educators. I'll answer it in a couple of different ways. One of them is that our most important strategic partners are, in fact, artists and educators. And across our platform, we have partnered with over 500 educators over the course of the history of these companies. And as you know, you mentioned spanning, you know, folk, EDM, hard rock, blues, jazz, country, and bluegrass, on and on and on and on, right? And we live and breathe through the partnerships and the curriculum that we create with artists, period, full stop. Some of those artists are recording artists, Grammy-winning, well-known, famous musicians in every space, whether we're talking about Ferry Corsten in the EDM space, or Roger Sanchez, or Nicky Romero, just to name three from Fader Pro. Or we're talking about Joe Bonamassa, or Greg Koch, or any one of the hundreds of incredible, you know, music educators that we have on True Fire and Jam Play, right? And I can go on and just drop names all day long of extraordinary educators, Robin Ford, you know, they're just so, Sierra Dawn Hull, who's an extraordinary young mandolin player who's, you know, playing across the country with everyone from Bela Fleck to the guys from the Fearless Flyers. I mean, just you name it, right? All, and for whatever music you like, right? So I don't dismiss them. I encourage them to get in touch with us because it may make sense for us to partner. And then, as I said earlier, the thing I like about this business is it doesn't necessarily cannibalize any of their other revenue streams. They can work with us to create curriculum and continue to gig, continue to educate, continue to do what they do to make a living. And that's pretty rare. Most of the other sides of the industry that I've seen, generally, you know, there's a cost associated for the artist. And for us, all we're asking for is time. And we don't even necessarily always need to get artists into our studio. We can do things remotely now. It's something we learned during the pandemic, right? Which is really critical. The last thing I would say about this, which is not True Fire Studios related, but is really related to how platforms on the internet have evolved over the last 5 years, is there are options now for educators that don't require that they make a binary choice between educating people in person and educating people using the internet, right? So sure, there's Patreon, but there's also tools like Kajabi that allow you to set up your own online schools and so on. Many of the educators and artists that we work with also have their own YouTube channels, also sell their own educational offerings. Along with that, we're not looking for exclusivity necessarily, right? What we're looking for are good partners who can help us create great curriculum. I always say to our team, we're only differentiated in three areas that really count. And it's an old marketing saw. They talk about CTA, call to action in marketing. Well, for True Fire Studios, CTA means curriculum, learning tools, and artists. That is where we differentiate. So no, I don't want anyone who is listening to this in your audience to imagine that we're trying to replace or obviate educators. It's quite the opposite.
One of the things that I think we can learn from companies like yours and the apps that you have is, as you mentioned, music teachers were thrown in the deep end. This pivot to online has been huge. A lot of them are keeping a hybrid approach now. But I think looking at the apps out there, we've also been able to go, well, how can we offer some of the pros, the convenience, the out of sync lessons where you can record your response to the lesson at a different time to the other person, things like that. How can we look at what the apps are offering and bring some of that to our studios? Maybe that's by building a library of resources that students can refer to when they're not in lessons with us and things. Do you think that's an appropriate way to learn from what's going on in music ed, in the tech space?
I think it's always appropriate to watch the customer. And that to me is absolutely the way to think about it, because none of us are mind readers. And yes, I know that there are people out there in the world who are really good at looking around corners. I've never been one of those people. I'm not a mind reader. I'm not a fortune teller. I can't see into the future. What I am interested in keenly is how behaviors shift and change, you know, as new platforms, technologies, and products emerge. So I think all of us ought to be really keenly focused on where the customer is, where the learner is, what are their expectations, what are their interests, what do they want? And you can do that just by talking to people, or you can send out, you can do polls on Twitter or Instagram. So it's about asking,
how do they want to learn?
Exactly. And then the other way I want to talk about it is that it's a continuum, right? Because, you know, on the one hand, you've got True Fire with pretty sophisticated learning tools, and it's sort of our bread and butter, and it's how we differentiate, whether it's synced tab or a purpose-built player that allows you to loop a phrase or slow a section down without pitching it up or down, right? So that you can, you know, really work through that arpeggio, right? Without actually changing the pitch of the notes, right? And those pieces I think are critical, but it's not a binary. It's not like you either have all these tools or you don't. The first thing that any educator can use is something as simple as Zoom. Just makes makes it easier for you to contact learners who might not be in your backyard or to take a lesson during a different time zone. And so that has, I think, opened up education, not only, you know, in terms of, you know, availability, but also you don't have to just focus on people who live in your physical proximity, right? And then you get all the way to, you know, there are tools out there that are purpose-built for online music education for sure, and ways that you can create real-time jamming and all sorts of different pieces. But I think it starts with, you know, what makes sense for you as an educator? Would you like to partner with a bigger company? Would you like to set up your own online shop? Would you just like to engage with your learners through social media, free social media platforms, or build your own YouTube page, as you have done quite successfully, Tim? I think there's lots of options, and it really is it's a question of what your goals and aspirations are as an educator.
One thing I've noticed is the TikTokification, I'm not sure if that's a real word, of people's attention spans, especially kids, and particularly in the last few years. I don't know if this is something that's played out in your company and the people that you work with. Has this had an effect? Is this short, this, you know, we used to be quite happy watching TikTok, YouTubes that were quite long, and now they're YouTube shorts and things like that. How's that affecting what you guys are doing?
It's a really good question. I think it really depends on the platform. If someone is already, you know, converted and they're a paying customer and, you know, they've got an all access subscription, you know, then they've demonstrated interest and they're going to dig in. But even within that, you know, we're always thinking about, can we get to the point quicker? Can we, can we find a 2-minute cut of this that we can put on YouTube to spark interest and so on? But we use all the platforms, including TikTok, for engagement purposes, right? All of them. I mean, YouTube is essentially an engagement play for us. We want people to understand which kind of educators we're working with and what sorts of curriculum we're building and all of that, right? I tend to try to have a little bit of grace because I think about myself in this, and you know, I think about, you know, my son and my family and my wife, and you know, the last 2 years has been really long and really difficult for everybody. And I think there's a lot of anxiety that surrounds the uncertainty of the world that we live in right now. There's a land war happening in Eastern Europe. You know, the climate, you know, I have friends in Australia. My friend posted some stuff on Instagram where her entire backyard got flooded in 3 hours.
Oh, there's some huge flooding up further north. Yeah.
Yeah. So there's just a lot of discontinuity and uncertainty in the world right now. And it tends to make people anxious and uncertain, and it makes it harder to focus. And I just try to be as thoughtful and, you know, empathetic as possible, not only, you know, with our audiences, but also with the team. It's just a hard time. I think everyone needs to keep that in mind. Now, does it mean that, you know, our attention spans are shot for good? Well, it's hard to say. But if we notice that people are interested in short form content, then as educators, we ought to pay attention to that and see if we can reach people on those platforms. You know, one of the best pieces of sort of business guidance and advice I ever heard was from the guy that I worked for when I was at iHeartRadio. And he said that the strategy of the company was to be everywhere the customer, in this case, the listener, expected us to be on all the platforms where they find themselves, right?
Sorry, the strategy was to be everywhere that the customer expects you to be.
Yeah, be everywhere the customer expects you to be, right? Now, that doesn't mean, again, if you're just a single educator, you're thinking to yourself, well, how can I be in all the, do I have to be on LinkedIn and TikTok? And you got to pick your spots, right? But if you know that your audience is on a platform, it's probably a good idea to at least spend some time on them.
I think it was Bill Gates that was content that said content is king, or I can't remember exactly. Do you still think that's the case? And the reason I ask is because so much of what I hear from our teachers is overwhelm. There's too much. I can't deal with it all. And the last 2 years have made that even worse. So a lot of people went just into their own shells, just went back to absolute basics. I'm just going to do the teaching that I know and it's easy. I'm not going to look too much outside. And I know you've been in the content space for a long time. So how do we juggle this both as consumers of content and people who are making content, that we try and manage this sense of people getting us overwhelmed, this too much?
Yeah, I mean, I think the notion that content is king is not incorrect, but I think it's much simpler to grok that concept in a world where there was more of a monoculture, where we're all watching whatever the same shows and listening to the same music. And I know that was never truly the case, but it sure felt like the world that I grew up in I was exposed to stuff whether I wanted to or not, because there just were fewer distribution points out there. So I think in the world that we live in now, content may still be king, but certainly distribution is queen. It, you know, a co-regent, if you like, you know, how people get the content is in some ways just as important as the content itself. And what I've noticed is, this is why I keep coming back to this notion of convenience, is people might settle for an experience that's not the best experience if it's super easy and low friction, right? And then free is nice too, but everyone needs to make a living. So you have to be able to demarcate what you're willing to give away for free. And then, you know, at what point you ask people to pay, because everyone deserves to make a living doing what, you know, doing what they know how to do. So, you know, I don't think it's quite as simple as content is king. There certainly have been, let's use another space because it's less freighted and emotional, you know, in terms of what we're talking about here. I know of lots of great, you know, shows that people just didn't pick up on. And then you read about them later and come back to them like, how is this not an enormous hit? And the answer is that it just didn't have great distribution or marketing, right? These things do count and they do matter. So I don't think it's quite as simple as content is king. Obviously, the quality of the educational content at the end of the day is the thing you're most in control of. And so I think from that perspective, it does make sense to focus on what you can control rather than what you can't.
I was really interested when you mentioned iHeartRadio. I did some research and I saw that you'd worked for both iHeartRadio and Pocket Casts, which is an Australian, did you say it was an Australian app, which is pretty cool. I didn't realize
Adelaide,
that.
Baby. Come on, represent there you go. Adelaide.
Go Adelaide. I didn't know iHeartRadio was a global thing. I just remember when I was driving one day and it was in the list of radios on the digital broadcast. I'm like, oh, that must be something that Nova or one of our channels here started. So it's actually started in America, did it?
Yeah, that's right. We launched the first iHeartRadio app in 2008. So it goes back quite a bit. I think Jamplay was founded in 2007. So right around the same time Jamplay launched. And I think Pocket Cast launched in 2010. So right all around the same time. So yeah, I worked on it for many years. And that was simply a recognition at the time that people wanted to access, you know, any station and a host of different audio content whenever they wanted, right, on their schedule. So in May of 2008, if memory serves correct, I launched a site, you know, through the division I was working on at the time, which was, the company was called Clear Channel, which is just a big radio company, also had an outdoor business. At any rate, we launched a website called iHeartMusic, which really the purpose of that site was to aggregate all of the different radio stations and some of the digital only stations as well into one place. So you could go to one location, one destination. That summer, the Apple App Store launched, right, to support the iPhone. And we recognized that having an app that did roughly the same thing as the website would probably be a good idea. And that's how iHeartRadio was born.
Right. Okay. Yeah, I assumed it was a play predominantly to move from analog radio stations into digital and be able to broadcast. Because anyone can listen to any radio station pretty much now, as long as it's digital. And so that's broadened that reach. Tell me about Pocket Cast though, because I've used Apple Podcast app and I currently use Overcast. Sorry. there are so many different apps for these things. What was the, you know, USP, the unique thing about Pocket Cast?
So I really, you know, again, Overcast is a great product, and Marco, who is the founder and works on it, is you know, a leader in the digital product space, and you know, a man of great integrity, and you know, he does that for joy. He creates Overcast just because he likes it. But he's, you know, we know him and we're very familiar with him, and I would argue that we're in many ways very similar. I would say the things that really differentiate Pocket Cast is, it's really just the best user experience in terms of the, you know, the ability to organize all of the podcasts that you subscribe to, the ease of which you can discover new podcasts. There's a big, big focus on curation inside of the app. And then all of the different features and functionalities, whether you want to, you know, trim silence or listen at different speeds, or if you want to create filters, which is like a way in podcasts of creating your own playlists. It's so functional and so easy to use and so nice to use. I think one of the things that we were always blown away by, and again, I haven't worked for the company for 2 years, but we were always blown away by how sort of feature restricted or poor the Apple Podcast app was. Like, it just didn't have basic features and functionalities that you would expect.
Never heard of it. Yeah.
And, you know, Stitcher had been around for a while, but it kind of got a little bloated and wasn't particularly fun to use and had a lot of extra screens and bloatware and crap in it. And I think that they've improved it somewhat since then. And Spotify, which even at that time did have podcasts, was really a music app. And the podcast UX was just not good. It was like jamming spoken word audio content into what was clearly designed to be
for music.
A music engine, a songs engine, right? And it just didn't feel like it was ever purpose-built in a way that made sense for people who are trying to enjoy podcasts. It was sort of bolted on, if you like. And so, you know, one of the things that happened was, you know, we made some additions to the app. It had been a paid app. We made it free to download. We added certain features and functionalities to the app. We also increased the functionality of the web version of the app, which is standalone. You can do a desktop version. You can do it through the website, all these different features and functionalities. And again, back to this, be wherever the customer expects you to be. And, in the dashboard of your car and, you know, on this OTT platform, whatever it was, we were everywhere, right? That was a big part of our value proposition. And actually a feature that you would think would be really, really obvious across the board was not, that almost none of our competitors offered, was if you were listening on your desktop at work and then you picked up your phone, it picked you up exactly where you were before, right? You didn't have to go to the beginning. You have to find it. So it just followed you throughout your day. And that was, I think, a big USP for us. And we were recognized by the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, Wired, The Verge, many, many, many outlets as the best way to listen to podcasts.
Might have to check that one out, I think.
It's free to download.
There you go. Well, look, I'm going to start wrapping up with just a few more questions, Owen, if that's okay. What do you think, let's give some advice to the music teachers listening. So have you got a few tips for them to keep growing in this ever-expanding, content-rich, high-tech world?
That's a great question. I think just this notion of relentless curiosity. Again, I am not a music educator by trade, so I wouldn't presume to second guess or give advice regarding pedagogy. I'm a great, as I've said, fan of educators and admire them greatly, but I'm not going to have much to say about that. What I would say is that cultivating curiosity about the space and the world and the analogous, the analogous industries, spend a little bit of time every week checking out, you know, what people are doing on TikTok. I have found so many amazing online music educators on TikTok. Amazing, across every possible genre. In fact, I've seen some of these people become educators in real time. For example, there is an educator that I follow on TikTok. She's amazing. She plays in an indie rock band that's in California. And I mean, she basically is Yngwie Malmsteen. So she's not really they don't play metal, but she is unbelievably talented, right? So I remember just dropping a comment, have you ever considered being an educator? And she responded saying, it's in the works. So in real time, I could see this person who I'd been following over months sort of figuring it out for themselves and realizing, actually, I have a gift. And then watching these other educators that you're seeing on these social platforms, what are they doing that you admire? What do you like about what they're doing, right? Not everybody's going to be Rick Beato. Like Rick Beato is talking about, you know, and has this enormous reach. And, you know, to a certain extent, he's educating. In another way, he's sort of talking about the history of rock and roll and the history of music and so on. You don't have to have that. You can be very focused. You know, think about what it is that you know you do really, really well. But for me, that's the number one piece of advice. Be curious. Don't say, you know, TikTok is for kids. You know what? There are people of all ages on, and I hate to pick on TikTok. I'm not using TikTok as an example. Look on, you know, whatever. What is the YouTube product? Is it called Shorts?
YouTube Shorts. Yeah. Yeah.
Look at Shorts. It's the same content. A lot of it's being ripped for the same, you know, for the same uses.
Reels. Facebook. Yeah.
It's all the same. Yeah. Just, you know, don't assume just because a lot of kids are using it that it's not for you. I think there's something that can be learned by watching what people of all ages and all backgrounds are doing.
Yeah, even if the platform isn't going to be a place where you can find students, you may learn about the ways people are engaging with that content or the kinds of content that people are sharing. That could be something that you could offer in a different channel or to your current students or whatever it is. So I think that's more what you're saying.
Better said even than I could. That's why you're the podcaster and I'm not.
All right. What about bigger predictions for the next 5 to 10 years in, let's just talk music, e-learning, education kind of space. Is it all AI and robots? Should we just give up now and let Cyberdyne Systems take over? And how do the teachers fit in?
Well, I will say this, you know, I mentioned earlier that I'm not a tea leaves reader. I will say this, I am dubious about the ability of AI anytime soon to get anywhere near the efficacy and intimacy of human-driven education. I'm not suggesting there isn't a place for AI, and I'm asked about this all the time, and there are certain apps and platforms out there right now that are, they're predicated on the use of technology, although sometimes you read that stuff and you think maybe it's just marketing speak or a way for them to raise money from venture capitalists or what have you. You know, I just know what I've seen, and what I've seen is that people really appreciate the opportunity to learn from someone. It's a way to connect, even if you're not connecting in real time. And I don't think that there's any substitute for the power and the impact of a person that you admire showing you something. And that doesn't necessarily has to be about how to play a scale. It could just be about feel or experience or an anecdote. And AI is not going to give you an anecdote about the first time that you played live and the mistakes that you made and what you learned about yourself. And these things matter. You know, there's something about education is a conversation, right? It's not rote. And if you're doing it the same for every person, you're probably not doing it right, because you got to take into account the fact that everyone's different and they're going to react and respond to different things. And only a human can bring that empathy into a conversation. And so I guess I just say again, I don't think that there's any magic wand or formula there. And yes, I know it can be intimidating with all of the new platforms and tools and technologies. But at the center of every one of these tools and technologies, you know, is a person or people that makes all of these things go, and can't cut people out of the process.
It's funny that you mentioned anecdotes. I'm doing a live stream lesson where I get taught by a teacher doing some advanced work. And one of the reasons is to just, you know, encourage teachers to seek out their own professional development and connect with other teachers and that sort of thing. But yeah, Fred, who's been teaching me, and he's an advanced technique specialist in advanced piano literature, was giving me some anecdotes. I was just thinking about the same thing. Even if there was an AI version of Fred, there wouldn't be that same connection and that sense of storytelling that he can do, and he can look at exactly what I'm doing and give me something that he knows will make sense to me to understand what he's trying to talk about, those kinds of things. So I'm glad we don't have to worry about that for now.
Yeah, beautifully said. I would just say this, you know, to the listeners, humans are story-seeking creatures. We're all looking for the narrative that wraps around our lives. It gives us meaning and purpose and focus. And, you know, educators have more impact on people than almost any other. I mean, maybe our parents have more impact, but other than that, outside of that, you know, think about the role.
Teachers are the ones you remember.
That's who you remember. And it doesn't matter whether or not you're an adult or you know, just a kid making your way. A powerful teaching experience can really change your life for the better. And so I really want to be as encouraging as possible for anyone who's listening. There is no doubt in my mind that it's the human connection that allows education to really stick.
That is a super cool comment to end on. But I did want to ask you one more question, which is just quickly, what are you working on next? What's TrueFire Studios got in store for us and all the instrumental learners of the world?
So we're trying to be as ambitious as possible, you know, in terms of the kinds of artists that we get to work with. You know, one of the operating theses that I have as part of the business is that that every artist, regardless of where they've gotten in their career, has you know, has a legacy. You know, and maybe they're educators and maybe they're not. In fact, a lot of the artists that we work with originally did not consider themselves to be primarily educators. And, you know, the ones who are educators, that's great, but that's not always the case. And, or they might think they can educate in certain areas, but not others. And the fact of the matter is that I think it's so vital that we provide a forum for great artists to describe and unpack their craft. Every artist out there and many educators have folks who, you know, who follow them and admire them. And if we can provide a way to deliver call it like a cultural, a way to be remembered that's beyond just their recorded output, right? So like if you make a record, that's great. That's your playing, that's your job. If you, you know, a sessions player, if you play live, right? But your legacy in some ways can be, I think, enhanced by an educational product, right? An educational output. And so I'm trying to encourage artists of all statures to partner with us, because I think that will help not just us, but anyone who's doing music education. Because when you see a Joe Bonamassa, if you're a blues fan, doing something like this, you think to yourself, oh, you know, boy, if Stevie Ray Vaughan was alive, maybe he would do this too. And then you think, oh, maybe, you know, maybe one day we can get John Mayer to do it, right? Like just to think as big as possible. So that's what we're busy doing, is trying to think as big as possible about who we can work with, how we can create better learning tools, how we can reach people on different platforms. And I also think we're being super aggressive as it pertains to partnerships in the music industry, right? So Gibson, PRS, Martin, you name it. We're trying to do as many great programs with them as possible, because what's the best way to get someone to keep playing? To give them a sense of mastery. You know, it's frustrating. Playing an instrument is hard, right? And one of the ways you can get people to stick is through education.
So TrueFire can be the education add-on to the instrument manufacturers if they don't have one of their own, kind of thing.
Correct, correct. So for example, you know, gift with purchase, right? Or a bundle of some kind. So that's sort of those are the basics, and you can think even more ambitiously than that. But I do feel like we have an opportunity to play a role in helping them get better outcomes for folks who buy instruments for them, for example. That could be software too, by the way. It could be a plugin. It could be a VST. It could be a virtual instrument of some kind. It could be, you know, a modeling cabinet, or it could just be your first acoustic guitar and everything in between.
Amazing. It's been great to meet you. Thank you so much for your time today. Owen, where should people go to find out more about TrueFire and all the different brands?
So all the different brands are showcased at truefirestudios.com. And then of course you can go to the individual platforms if you're interested in learning more about their offerings, truefire.com, jamplay.com, faderpro.com, and don't forget artistworks.com. Artistworks is amazing, an amazing resource. Yeah, and if anybody ever wants to reach out to me, I'm Owen at truefirestudios.com, or check me out on Twitter, at ogrover, where I tweet about all sorts of different things, but especially about music and music technology. So love to see you there, out there on the internets.
Sounds great. Thanks again for coming on the show.
My pleasure, Tim. Thanks so much.
Well, I hope I asked Owen the questions that were on the tip of your tongue or in the back of your head somewhere, and I hope you got some value from today's interview, talking with someone that really does know the landscape of online education and the impact it can have on students. And it was great to hear, I think, his take on where we fit as independent teachers in the mix as well, and how we can use online technologies to improve the offerings that we give our students. And I think if there's one thing the pandemic has taught us in the last couple of years, it's that we can get a whole lot of value from online offerings, not just online lessons, but also creating online resources for students, either for internal in our studios by building up lesson libraries and activity libraries and teaching videos, and also by offering things to the greater world, building YouTube channels and potentially saving and recording videos to share as courses and all those kinds of things. If you are interested in what you can create and share with other people around the world, then make sure you do check into episode 269, which was all about how to sell your music teaching materials online. Well, that's it for the show this week. If you heard about an event or product or service and didn't have the chance to write it down, don't worry. We've got everything covered for you. You can find everything we talked about over on the website at topmusic.co/episode272. Or just look for the Learn tab at the top of the page and you can find the Topcast through there. Next week on the podcast, we're going to be unpacking what it means to be a top music teacher. Yes, that's probably you if you're listening to this podcast. Whether you are a member of our community or you've just been enjoying our videos and resources or our Facebook group or our blog, you are part of our top music teaching tribe. And so I can't wait to hear what you think of our Top Music Teaching Manifesto, which I'm going to share with you next week. Until then, I'm Tim Topham, and you've been listening to the Topcast. Can't wait to catch up with you again this time next week. Bye-bye, everyone. For more information about this episode and to find out how to enhance your own teaching, visit topmusic.co. You'll find everything you need for your studio, from lesson plans to cheat sheets, quick win teaching ideas, and guides on how to build your teaching business. Plus, you'll be connected to a global community of the world's top music teachers. And when you're ready, join hundreds of other teachers around the world by becoming a Top Music Pro member and get access to all our bonus content and flagship courses. And don't forget to follow topmusic.co on social media and subscribe to this podcast wherever you listen to it. That's all for today. We'll see you in the studio.